Welcome to Business Second Opinion with Carol Sanford, a respected thought leader in the world of business design for growing people in order to grow your business. She always offers a contrarian view on what sacred temples of wisdom, such as the Harvard Business Review, advise. Her approach is based on living systems research and her four decades of practice with Fortune 500 companies and rockstar entrepreneurs. I'm Zach Swartout, and I'm your host. Today, Carol is giving a business second opinion on dumbing down thinking. We're going to be looking at an article entitled Simple Rules for a Complex World by Kathleen M. Eisenhart from the September 2012 issue of the Harvard Business Review. Welcome, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
So in your new book, The Regenerative Business, you have 30 toxic practices that organizations should avoid. So, but today, it sounds like you're going to give us 31, number 31, I guess. So what toxic practice that you want to redesign are we looking at today?
You're right. The funny thing is that I actually have developed over 100 of them. I've looked at organizations. And what I mean by toxic, we should say to people, which is that it works against the primary underlying capacity of human beings that makes them most human and most able to contribute and able to grow and be in the world. So this 31st one, I call simplifying instead of essentializing. And it is very toxic because it's based on an idea. I'm sure you've heard this, which is meet people where they are.
Yes.
Right. You've heard that, right?
Yeah.
So that's the idea that somehow people are fixed and you have to go to them. And so you have to take anything you've got, whether it's a new skill you need to build or a new idea or a new action you want them to get involved in, and you have to move it from where the idea is over so it matches where people are. That is what the really toxic idea. Now, why is that toxic? Because it assumes people are fixed, and not only can they not grow, but they can't actually even learn to think better and think about complexity.
So where did this idea of dumbing thinking down or meeting people where they're at, where did this come from?
I think it comes from an assumption that people are more fixed. I mean, Kel Dwork at Stanford did a really great piece of research showing that the majority of people think that other people are kind of fixed where they are. So if you are extraordinary, that's great. You know, you're a top talent. You can get lots of money. If you're at the bottom of the hierarchy, you're fixed there. Not understanding how much context played, how much development people have, and the circumstances that they grow up in. So it has become ingrained in our thinking, especially with IQ tests that were brought in, and you could give people a test and you could determine literally what level of intelligence they had. And of course, that was a snapshot, but we never thought of it as a snapshot. And slowly we've come to the idea that you could grow people so they could have more skills, they could know more, they could be able to accomplish more. What we haven't gotten to the idea of is that you can develop people. You can develop a capacity that doesn't exist at all, including in the process of how we think. And that's part of what I thought I'd like to share with you today.
So what makes this practice so toxic at the end of the day?
All right. So what makes this so toxic, really, is that it leaves people stuck and it leaves organizations doing really stupid things, like trying to simplify a very complex world rather than building the capacity of people to function and grow in a complex world. And it's based on the fundamental idea that we just have to put people, we have to put things into language, as the people in this article say, and into such simplified, broken down ideas that they'll be able to grasp them. Now, the challenge with that is you break down things into such simplified form that you don't have a sense of a whole. But the exciting thing is, actually, if you could move away from what is called mental models, which is kind of the automatic thinking people have, the way they view the world, you can help them learn to see that into using something called systemic frameworks so that people could build the capacity to see complexity, which is what allows us to deal with the actual real complexity in the world. Now you have a chance to build an organization and a society that's much more effective.
Got it. So So then in light of this article and kind of where it's going and what its premises are, what's being advocated here or what's being advocated for here?
Basically, they're advocating that you set priorities and you just take the very top things and you communicate those to people, give them some way that they can localize them if they need to and coordinate if they need to. But basically, you create fragmentation. You look at the very complex ideas and the corporate objectives, and you break them down into some priorities, maybe four is actually what they suggested. I noticed in both of their examples. And that means that people don't have a context for what they're working in. They actually lose the sense of purpose and connection. And they, of course, can get more clarity to those, but you're not developing motivation and will, and you're certainly not inviting innovation. So that's basically what they're suggesting that you do. Get it down to something that people can get it done because they know exactly when they get there. You've got metrics and you know when you're there.
So, Carol, what do you recommend we do instead here?
Well, I guess the fundamental thing is moving from the idea that we have to focus on dumbing down everything to individuals to giving them the capacity to see and be connected to the complexity. Now, I think that probably sounds pretty highly overwhelming to a lot of managers. So how do you do that? And the major way that you do it is you move from having everything internally defined and organized to having it externally connected. You build a link from every individual inside of an organization or business to that which they serve out in the organization. Now, of course, that sounds pretty hard. Like, how in the world do I know as an individual working inside of a hospital or inside of a manufacturing unit, what's really the effect that we're trying to achieve? And if you, instead of breaking everything down, this simplifying so that you give people their part, you actually have them understand what the whole is of what the corporation is doing, which is done by a very focused, specific corporate direction, which says, this is who we are in the market. Like Seventh Generation said, we are an authentic voice that helps people understand where health happens between the ecosystem we live in and your home. That's our work. We're always working in that arena. And then you have clear pursuits about what the business is doing. You can engage people and begin to understand how their role, everything they do, fits. One of the ways you do that is by building their connection also to real buyers. Instead of building a connection to real buyers, what people tend to do in an organization is they do market research and give you the data all broken down. You can't even understand who the customer was and the effect they had. What you've got is them having broken down, simplified data. The whole idea that we have of simplifying everything rather than connecting people to those external systems is really a flaw in being able to have people support innovation. Now, in order to do that, you have to add the second kind of phase, which is you have to do a lot of development of people to think systemically. I work with something called systemic frameworks to do that. We have mental models in our head anyway, but they're automatic. They're unshared. They're unarticulated. And until you can actually educate people to see the world through these systemic frameworks so that you can be intentional about what you're looking for and see how it all relates, you can't make use of this first phase, which is connecting people to the external world. One of the things that we tend to do with some kinds of frameworks is develop principles which people can operate with rather than rules, because rules are very easy to tell whether you did it right or wrong, but they don't give you any way to develop over time, to grow something, to do it better. So we try and put in place principles that people can use to develop themselves and reflect as a part of a developmental process. The third thing, and this is going to sound like a big jump, and of course, we talk about it a lot more in the book, but is asking people to produce something called promises beyond ableness. So now I can see the bigger world. I understand customers. I understand what we as a business have promised. We've developed me, and I actually understand how to see things, how to deal with complexity. Now, what am I going to do about it? And I believe that the thing that really shifts will and shifts the ability for an organization to be innovative is not the simplifying, so it's down to the smallest thing I can do, but stepping it up to what's the thing that I could do that would make the most impact. And it doesn't have to be complicated. It can be something so simple like redesigning a point of sale for a customer or transforming how it is they receive products. There are many things that people can do that are within their expertise, but when they can see that complexity, when they have principles they can operate with, we develop their capacity, they can achieve things that lead you into true innovation. So basically, that's what I suggest. Quit dumbing down and grow people to be able to see what supposedly the few people at the top of your organization can see. You want everyone having that mind of the CEO.
So, Carol, you actually started telling a little bit of a story earlier about seventh generation. So do you have a story or an example that you might show us of how seventh generation went through those phases?
Well, yeah. When I first met seventh generation, of course, they were trying to do better than the really bad products they had in the market. House cleaning products were very toxic. And so seventh generation was trying to make them non-toxic. But that didn't in any way give a stretch in the market, which was really happening, which was very complex, where parents were trying to figure out how to grow their children, keep them healthy and vital. And there were a group of those who were actually connecting to what the ecosystem wanted. What we did is a lot of development of people's ability to think systemically and complexly at the top of the organization, or not only the top, but very quickly making it possible for everyone to do that. So we began with learning how to think complexly about strategy. That permeated out into the organization quickly, and it allowed us to develop this corporate direction of becoming the authentic voice based on what was unique about seventh generation and what was going on in the market at the time. So it takes a different capacity to be able to develop the ability to engage complexity, but it is what let them go from being a company which was barely breaking even to one that was growing $100 million a year and growing its revenues 45 to 65%. Which is what it really takes to make a difference. You got to have a good platform.
We'll be right back. I want to remind everyone about how to participate in the show by joining in our quiz on SurveyMonkey each week. This is where you can offer articles for review from HBR or other popular business written media. Find the link at businesssecondopinion.com. It's more fun to listen when you participate. To get educated about Carol's approach to critiquing popular ideas, you can also download her chapter at businesssecondopinion.com. Plus, there's a weekly drawing for a free copy of Carol's new book, The Regenerative Business. You can qualify for the drawing by participating in the quiz, writing comments, or recommending an article for Carol to review. So I have some follow-up questions again this week, all about this article around dumbing down and kind of reducing complexity in this way. So the first question is, what do you do with people who don't want to learn?
There's no such thing.
Okay, tell me more.
So the context people are in, people, you know, we're always talking about how do we get people motivated. People are always motivated, but it's toward what? When people can see an opportunity to contribute, an opportunity to make a difference, their entire attitude about learning changes. The major way I do it was with these ideas of people making promises of something they think ought to happen that would make a difference, not internal to the company, but to a consumer, to a market, to something that could make a difference to the business. I have seen rarely do people not rise to that. Of course, it's a different design of a business. There are always a few people who will leave a company when you go after this kind of thing because they're really struggling in life for whatever reason. But you don't work on them. You work on building where 99% of the people are going to pick up and run and work on their own development. They love the challenge because it's innate to us as humans. We have personal agency. And if we can build a capacity of people to use that and use it in conjunction with a corporate direction, things just become radically different.
So in the article, they advocate kind of simple rules. And I hear you talking about framework thinking. So once again, I'll play the devil's advocate because a lot of the managers that I talk to say the last thing they need is more tools. So they don't even use the ones they have, they say. So how do you respond to that argument?
Well, I would agree with them. You don't need tools. Frameworks are not tools. You actually already have in your head mental models, which are the way you're viewing the world. They're fixed. They're invisible. You can't even see they're there. You don't know what you're doing. And those mental models you have are the ones that are undermining you. So you have mental models that have everything dyadic. It's either good or bad, right or wrong, you know, up or down, plus or minus. That mental model is limiting your ability to see something in a more comprehensive way. A framework lets you be explicit about how you're going to think. A tool is a what you're going to use, but most of those tools are based on old mental models. So you can't actually fundamentally change how an organization works unless you make explicit how they're thinking. And if the tools you're given and the tools you make up are from the old models, then they're of no use. So I'd throw them away pretty quickly too. Now, you need to have the ability to see how you're currently thinking that's limiting you and have systemic frameworks that let you make different choices about how you're thinking. Then you can apply it to anything, but it takes a little while to learn that. And it is certainly can't be used as a tool or if it's no use because you got the old mental model using a new tool.
So in the article, as I read through the process they use, and they call this rules for developing simple rules, they have this kind of 1-2-3-step approach. And I know we've talked about this kind of approach before, but they say set corporate objectives, identify a bottleneck that keeps you from achieving those objectives, and then create simple rules for managing the strategic bottleneck. So help me to understand the difference in developing and then using something like principles, both in how you go about creating them and then how they're used.
Well, first you have to look at the idea of bottleneck is just not a very good concept. It's not that they don't exist, but what you're doing is looking at the downside of something, and it's never one spot that you go work on. There is a system as a whole, and fixing the bottleneck doesn't mean you don't move it back up the bottle, you know, so to speak. And so if you get people focusing on problems all the time based on how it should ideally run, you never learn to redesign the entire system so that it works in a more effective way. And you want people being able to visualize the working of the system. So first, just the idea of bottleneck is not a very systemic thought. Secondly, I'm going to contrast what you're talking about with principles with the way they're talking about rules. Because rules, again, tend to be out of old mental models of there's a right and a wrong way to do it. That's what a rule means. Versus a principle says, over time, we can evolve how we're doing something. So a rule might be get it right every time. A principle might be improve its capacity to deliver better effects every time. If I can learn to assess the effects that we're doing and determine how well we're doing and get the idea that I could do that better every time, it's much better than me having something about there's a right and a wrong way, which means I'm not actually evolving the system over time. That in itself is a big step off of the rule. There is a third step you can take, which is be able to innovate every time you do it. This is what Procter & Gamble always did. They said every time they did a changeover on machines and production, they wanted that machine to be extended in terms of its life and its ability to produce in a more refined way every time it was taken down, reconstructed, or they had a changeover. That's a principle, which is different than put it back exactly the way it was and have it make no mistakes. So principles first are just, they're things that give you an opportunity to evolve something over time. But of course, you have to use them. I know that you've told me before that you know people who develop principles about how teams are going to work, and they're really probably much more rules, and they aren't the ability to evolve over time. But you need to have the reflective process is at regularly at the end of meetings or engagements, which say, or how are we doing against our principles? I usually have organizations develop something called managing principles, which is how are we going to manage? And especially I'll do it with executive teams and have them look at how are we going to manage that's really going to shift the culture, shift how we work. And I ask them at the end of every time they gather, which is usually weekly, once in a while it's every 2 weeks, or every time they're on a call with two or more of them, to stop and reflect on those principles and ask, how are we going to improve our performance against those principles? So you have to institute a reflective process of looking on how you're progressing toward those principles and beyond those principles and what it is you need to do next, or else they're just tools that have no real effectiveness either.
Carol, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
Do you want to suggest articles for Carol to review? Maybe post questions for her to answer or argue with her response and get a second opinion. Become a member at businesssecondopinion.com. Subscribe and review this podcast and get put in a drawing to win a copy of her new book, The Regenerative Business, or a poster of readers' favorite quotes from the book. Also subscribe to the blog that accompanies the podcast and newsletter that keeps you up to speed on what's coming next.